This morning, America's First News starts right after this. As a business owner, you need protection for your physical and financial assets. From general and professional liability insurance to business owners and commercial auto policies, GEICO can help. Go to geicocommercial.com for your free quote and see how much you could save today.
From Compass Media Networks, this is America's First News. This morning with your host, Gordon Deal.
Veteran TV personality suspended. Good morning, I'm Gordon Deal, along with Jennifer Koschenka. It is Tuesday, November 21st. Glad you're with us. Here's what we have for you this hour.
Charlie Rose, co-host of CBS This Morning, is off the air after eight women claimed inappropriate sexual behavior. Meanwhile, a second woman is now accusing Senator Al Franken of groping.
The Justice Department is suing to block the proposed merger of AT&T and Time Warner.
The Trump administration plans to return North Korea to the list of countries that support state-sponsored terrorism.
And why the nation's librarians are finding themselves busier than ever.
They're good at not asking you why you want something. For instance, the library in Pittsburgh was asked to supply instructions for how to build a guillotine. They didn't ask the person why he wanted to build a guillotine. They just sent him some diagrams.
Wall Street Journal reporter Bob Haggerty on the different questions and problems that face reference librarians on a daily basis. He's here in about 20 minutes. The Justice Department says it will sue to block AT&T's $108 billion acquisition of Time Warner. Time Warner, which owns HBO, TNT, and TBS, is mostly in the pure content business, while AT&T, which sells phone and internet access and owns DirecTV, is largely in the media distribution business. Randall Stephenson is the CEO of AT&T.
When we announced this deal, the best legal minds in the country agreed that this transaction would be approved since our companies don't even compete with each other.
Mergers like this have rarely faced much scrutiny. For example, the Obama administration approved a similar merger between Comcast and NBC Universal back in 2011. So the Atlantic wonders, by what standard would Justice approve that deal but deny the AT&T merger with Time Warner? For one, the Atlantic says, first explanation is the merger provides an obvious temptation for anti-competitive practices. But a second explanation argues that the Justice Department is acting purely on President Trump's behalf to punish Time Warner for its negative coverage of his administration through ownership of CNN. Veteran television host Charlie Rose has been suspended by CBS after eight women came forward to tell The Washington Post that he made unwanted sexual advances toward them. The allegations against Mr. Rose, who co-hosts CBS This Morning, included lewd phone calls, walking around naked in their presence while traveling with him on business, and groping their breasts, butts, or genital areas. The Post says the women were employees or aspired to work for the 75-year-old Mr. Rose at The Charlie Rose Show from the late 1990s to as recently as 2011. Post investigative reporter Amy Britton spoke to ABC News.
One woman that we spoke to who worked for him as an intern in the 1990s recalled him coming out of the shower naked, and she was just completely frozen. She did not know what to do. She was working alone with him in his apartment at a desk.
Mr. Rose apologized in a statement to the Post saying, quote, "In my 45 years in journalism, I have prided myself on being an advocate for the careers of the women with whom I have worked." President Trump is ramping up the pressure on North Korea over its nuclear weapons program. During a cabinet meeting at the White House yesterday, he said he plans to declare Kim Jong-un's government a state sponsor of terrorism. In calling out Pyongyang, Mr. Trump cited the recent death of American citizen Otto Warmbier after he was taken into custody in North Korea. He also appeared to reference North Korea's support of an assassination of Mr. Kim's half-brother, Kim Jong-nam, who's a political rival. Your Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
We still hope for diplomacy, and the timing of this is just one of us concluding the process. There is a very specific designation process.
Mr. Trump made the announcement 1 week after returning from a trip to Asia, where he asked China and other countries in the region to tighten the financial and diplomatic vise on North Korea. The George W. Bush administration took the country off the terror list in 2008. The Treasury Department today will announce an additional economic sanction on North Korea. It's 11 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Now that Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell says he believes Roy Moore's female accusers, Mr. McConnell got the logical next question. So do you also then believe President Trump's female accusers? Mr. McConnell didn't answer that question, but it does highlight the difficult precedent the GOP is setting for itself by disowning Mr. Moore, the GOP Senate candidate in Alabama. More from Aaron Blake, senior political reporter at The Washington Post. Aaron, what do we have?
Well, basically, the Republican Party establishment in Washington has decided that they do indeed believe what the accusers of Roy Moore have said in recent days. They have decided he needs to step aside, that he, even if he wins the election and joins the Senate, they have said that they will move to expel him from the Senate. And I think it's a difficult thing for them to do, if for no other reason than because their president also faced allegations of sexual misconduct towards the end of the 2016 campaign. Republicans, of course, still supported him. They've worked with him as president. They basically suggested that they don't, put too much stock in those allegations because they have supported him as their president. And so I think it's a question now of what the standard is for Republicans in Washington. Why do they believe the allegations in the case of Roy Moore when they didn't seem to believe or take action on allegations that were made against President Trump just about a year ago?
All right, so is it a matter of credibility? Do some Republicans believe the Roy Moore accusers more so than Mr. Trump's accusers? And if so, why?
I think that's the most logical explanation. I don't think that they've made that case publicly, though. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell was asked about this on Tuesday. Basically, if you believe Moore's accusers, do you also believe Trump's accusers? And he avoided the question. I don't know exactly what the answer is, but I do know that even going down that road is a really difficult thing for Republicans to do because it involves basically, saying one female accuser is right, whereas another one is wrong, and that you're actually doubting the words of somebody who accused the president. So not a great conversation for the party to be having, certainly.
We're speaking with Aaron Blake, senior political reporter at The Washington Post, about his piece entitled "The GOP's Problematic Decision to Believe Roy Moore's Accusers, But Not Trump's Accusers." What about the idea that neither of these men have been convicted of anything, just have had fingers pointed at them?
Yeah, I think that's a tough, that makes the situation even tougher because, we're likely to never really have a full resolution about these allegations. We obviously never had a resolution, legally speaking, when it came to Trump. And there's a deadline here. We have an election that's a month away, and lawmakers and voters need to decide how much credibility they believe these accusations have. It's certainly an imperfect system, and it's one that causes people to make those kinds of evaluations. But I think politically speaking, it's a little bit different than an election. If you're saying that the allegations are credible enough that you want to withhold your support from Roy Moore, that's your prerogative. And it's different, I think, than saying Roy Moore needs to go to jail for this. And so I think Republicans are basically trying to strike that balance right now.
Interesting. I was looking at some of the comments to your story, which probably most reporters don't because they can get out of hand in a hurry. But it didn't even seem like folks there had a reasonable explanation. It just sort of dived into finger pointing politics. There was nobody had an answer or a solution.
Yeah, it's also, like I said, it's a matter of what the standard is going forward. If we get to a point where Roy Moore is elected in Alabama, and I think that's a distinct possibility still at this point, if he joins the Senate and the Republicans do move to expel him from the Senate for these accusations that, of course, haven't been proven, is this the standard that the Senate's going to use moving forward? If other senators have a couple of allegations that seem credible, are they also going to be expelled from the Senate? I don't think a lot of senators want that necessarily to be the standard, but that's what they're basically saying they're going to do in the case of Roy Moore.
Thanks, Aaron. Aaron Blake, senior political reporter at The Washington Post. Reminder, by the way, that we can connect on social media. You can friend us on Facebook or follow us on Twitter with the username at This Morning Show. If you like some cynicism and sarcasm, you can follow me directly on Twitter at Gordon Deal. It is 19 minutes now after the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Kashenka is here with more of America's First News.
Gordon, the Trump administration is due to announce new sanctions on North Korea today after declaring it a state sponsor of terrorism. North Korea joins Iran, Sudan, and Syria on the terror blacklist, a largely symbolic step, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson.
This just continues to tighten the pressure on the Kim regime, all with an intention to have him understand this is only going to get worse until you're ready to come and talk.
As part of its maximum pressure campaign, President Trump says the Treasury Department will impose more sanctions on North Korea and related persons starting today without hinting who or what would be targeted. Charlie Rose is the latest public figure to be felled by sexual misconduct allegations, with PBS halting distribution of his nightly interview show and CBS News suspending him following a Washington Post report with the accusations of eight women. The women, who all worked for Rose or tried to work for him, accused the veteran newsman of groping them, walking naked in front of them, and telling one that he dreamed about her swimming nude. Amy Britton is an investigative reporter for The Post.
Many of these women don't even know each other, and they worked for Charlie in different years, and the similarities in this story are really striking.
In a statement, the 75-year-old Rose said he was deeply embarrassed and apologized for his behavior. BuzzFeed is reporting that Michigan Congressman John Conyers settled a complaint in 2015 from a woman who alleged she was fired from his Washington staff because she rejected his sexual advances. The website says Conyers' office paid the woman over $27,000 to settle the complaint under a confidentiality agreement. BuzzFeed says it received the documents from a right-wing activist but independently confirmed their authenticity. British Airways is changing the way it boards planes to favor those who bought the priciest tickets, and flyers are outraged. Starting next month, passengers will be assigned to one of five groups. Group one, composed of people who paid the most, will board first, and so on until group five, who paid the least, they'll board last. Airlines have long boarded first-class passengers first but haven't divided the rest by money spent on tickets.
Well, they are now. It's all about the class. All about the class when it comes to airlines.
I know, how embarrassing. You're right? Last getting on.
This is a commercial right now, right, where the guy walks to the front of the plane to like use the bathroom or something, and then the flight attendant just like snaps the curtain shut as he approaches first class.
I've seen that on real planes.
It's 22 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for joining us. Are you frustrated by the inability to find certain information online? Don't rule out your local librarian. These folks handle daily telephone calls about everything. Wall Street Journal reporter Bob Haggerty says even in the internet age, reference librarians still dig up answers that require extra effort. Searching old books, microfilm, and paper files, looking for everything from owners of long-defunct firms to 19th century weather reports. Bob, what have you found?
Well, yes, people still want to have some help from people. You know, you can find a thousand answers on Google, but you might not know which is the correct answer, and librarians can help with that. Librarians also have access to databases that you can't find on the internet. They can dig into, you know, articles 100 years ago in the local paper, for instance, or the city directory from 1943. So there are a lot of things they can find. And then a lot of people just don't or can't use computers. So they come to librarians with all kinds of very basic questions.
Well, so librarians, at least sort of reading between the lines in your story, librarians have almost become like a 411, right? They can answer anything.
That's true. And people call them up to ask what time it is. People ask them for phone numbers.
Wow.
People ask them for stock prices and who's going to pitch for the Dodgers tonight, you name it.
And that's part of their duties, I guess, right? I mean, have they evolved over the years, or it's always been that way?
They have evolved in some ways because a lot of people do get basic information from Google today, so they might come to the libraries with more difficult, challenging research questions. But there's still a lot of people who ask questions that could be found fairly easily on the internet. And librarians really welcome these questions, I think partly because the more people they're serving, the more they can justify taxpayer funding. And there are a lot of people who don't have access to computers, and so they can't get a job because you have to apply online. So the one place they can go for help is the library.
That's interesting. And the library kind of offers even basic skills with regards to that stuff, don't they?
That's right. They'll teach you how to use the computer, how to set up an email account, everything you need to know.
Also, you mentioned privacy is respected. Explain that.
Well, they're good at not asking you why you want something. For instance, the library in Pittsburgh was asked to supply instructions for how to build a guillotine. They didn't ask the person why he wanted to build a guillotine. They just sent him some diagrams.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal reporter Bob Haggerty. He's written an interesting piece entitled Google Schmoogle, Reference Librarians Are Busier Than Ever. Why is it, I guess, at least according to the headline, that they're busier than ever? I would think the opposite might be true with the amount of available search engines today online.
Well, I think that libraries have leaner staffs than they did in the past, and the people who are still there have lots of duties, not just answering questions, so they kept hopping most of the time.
And I thought it was interesting, too, you not only looked at Pittsburgh, but you said even in Silicon Valley, right, the home of some of these search engine headquarters, these librarians are busy.
That's right, yeah. I talked to the head librarian in Mountain View, California, and she told me somebody called up to ask for the address to the White House.
What's the future for librarians? Do they see them sticking around or managing at least the same amount of work in the coming years?
Librarians I talked to did feel that they're going to stay in business because there is a huge need for these services.
Is there a time, I guess, when they feel like everything will be online? Like you point out, they have access to databases that are not public or at least have not been published. I don't know, like some old microfilm or something. Will that change ever?
Well, you know, I think even if somehow you did put everything online, a lot of people wouldn't have the skill to make the right kind of search and wouldn't know what to believe, what was credible, what is the best way to narrow down your results from, you know, a million different documents to the one you really need.
Thanks, Bob. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Bob Haggerty in Pittsburgh. It's 30 minutes now after the hour on This Morning, America's First News. You don't often find the words business and friendly in the same sentence, let alone the same state. Unless, of course, you're talking about Michigan. Michigan's business-friendly practices help them become a leader in industries that range from agriculture and cybersecurity to aerospace and defense. In fact, Michigan is ranked among the top 10 states for major new and expanded facilities, which makes Michigan more than business-friendly. It makes Michigan business smart. To learn more, visit MichiganBusiness.org. Small business never stops moving, so Dell's U.S.-based small business technology advisors are trained to keep up. Just call 877-BUY-DELL to get connected with an advisor who will get to know your business and tailor a solution with Dell PCs powered by Intel Core processors that is right for you, so you can focus on your business and leave the tech questions to Dell. Call 877-BUY-DELL to get in touch with a tech advisor today.
America's First News is online all the time. Follow us on Twitter at This Morning Show. Like us on Facebook or send us an email. This Morning at CompassMediaNetworks.com.
Thanks for being with us on this Tuesday, November 21. Gordon Deal with Jennifer Koshenka. Some of our top stories and headlines. CBS's Charlie Rose suspended over sexual misconduct allegations. A second woman now accusing Senator Al Franken. Congressman John Conyers reportedly paid off a woman who says she was fired for refusing his advances. Trump administration ending immigration protection for 59,000 Haitians living here since an earthquake 7 years ago. They're getting a year and a half notice. And the crazy turkey recipe to wow your friends with. That story in about 20 minutes. 2 months after Hurricane Maria tore across the island, Puerto Rico's healthcare system is still struggling. Storm damage and power outages remain problems, especially in rural areas where access is still difficult. More from Wall Street Journal hospital reporter Melanie Evans. Melanie, what did you discover?
I spoke with physicians from New York who had traveled in recent weeks to Puerto Rico. Some of those physicians actually ended up working with a nonprofit healthcare group called AmeriCares that does relief work. And really what they ended up doing was traveling to rural and more remote parts of Puerto Rico where they either set up a walk-in clinic or they made house calls. They described basically arriving sometimes with very little notice, but that didn't seem to matter. They would see dozens of residents in a day. And sometimes those residents couldn't make it to the clinic, and that's when they would walk with family or friends to a house to make a house call.
Boy, it's just incredible. And I think the one doctor was saying he was treating a woman like on her front porch, and all of a sudden people just started gathering, and he was there for like a couple hours.
Yeah, so he described making a house call to meet a woman. He just basically said she had some chronic illnesses, and he was checking on her, and he described, you know, standing on her porch and seeing out of the corner of his eye a line that started to form. And he turned around, he said it was pretty remarkable. It happened organically. It became a small clinic. They had a kind of he had a nurse there who helped triage the patients, and they were as you said, working for a couple of hours to see as many people as they could. Another member of his team described, you know, this work that they had done over a couple of weeks. She basically said pretty much everywhere they went, they had to leave before they could see everybody. The demand was really great.
My goodness. We're speaking with Wall Street Journal hospital reporter Melanie Evans about her piece entitled 2 months After Maria, Puerto Rico's Health System Struggles to Meet Needs. And you point out, too, like, there's some seriously sick folks here. This was not like, hey, I hurt my finger, I rolled my ankle, I think I have a cold. There were some illnesses that were really exacerbated here, like diabetes.
Yeah. So a lot of the people that they described seeing were people with chronic conditions, some of whom had stockpiled medications for about a month. But the problem was it was now 2 months out, and they had run out of prescriptions. In other cases, folks had been without medications since the storm, and these are diseases that need daily maintenance. They need heart pressure medication or insulin. It needs to be kept cool, and so this has also been a problem that because the power grid is not fully restored, there are communities that are without power and unable to keep medicine or food cool. And so the doctors and nurses that I spoke to also described our residents, you know, they had food, but the food that they had was, you know, things that could sort of be preserved. There was a lot of salt, and that a lot of salt can actually be a problem for people with chronic disease. It can sort of further exacerbate their illness.
Wow. How problematic, by the way, is the fact that only about half the island has power? I mean, that's got to be a tremendous stress on hospitals.
So the hospitals, according to the last report, which was from FEMA that I saw, that was about a week ago, the hospitals are... a number of hospitals are back on the grid. The grid is still a little shaky, but again, this is about a week ago. About 1 in 5 hospitals were still operating on generators. So that can be problematic I also spoke with the head of a sort of a primary care association there. She said a number of clinics were still on generators, which meant that they had to be kind of selective about what kind of services they could offer.
That's incredible. Wall Street Journal hospital reporter Melanie Evans. 21 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for spending time with us. Welcome into Tuesday. Restaurant chains are adding more limited time items to their menus as they look for ways to temporarily juice their sliding sales. That's raising revenue, but also straining restaurant supply chains, which are not always equipped for a sudden surge in demand for like cookie butter milkshakes or mango shrimp rice bowls like they are for, say, burger buns and tomatoes. Here's Wall Street Journal reporter Erica Phillips. Erica, what's up here?
Increasingly, restaurant chains and convenience stores are using limited time offers and special menu items to draw in customers. That industry has been having some trouble getting people through the door, and this is actually working pretty well. There's been a little bit of a spike in customer traffic over the last quarter after several quarters of it being down, and analysts attribute that in part to almost a 50% increase in the number of limited time offers recently versus years prior.
All right. So as you mentioned, when you get some of this unique stuff and it's hard to predict demand when one of these items is introduced, how do these folks manage that?
Right. So it's a combination not only of just predicting the demand for it, which they'll do pilots and they'll do testing and this and that for that, but also just with the proliferation of these types of offers, these types of special items, there's a whole supply chain set up for the restaurant industry that has to not only respond to one restaurant's special request for avocado or pumpkin spice flavoring, but you know, hundreds of these every month are going on. And so you can just imagine the problem gets sort of amplified in the supply chain. We're talking about manufacturers of deli meats and cheeses and special spices and people who source special vegetables and other special ingredients, you know, suddenly are faced with, you know, a bunch of temporary requests for this and that. And it just has become a little bit difficult to meet all of that demand and changing so much, you know, from week to week.
Explain what happened, your example of Tropical Smoothie Cafe this past summer.
Right. So Tropical Smoothie Cafes, which they have about several hundred of them in mostly in the southeastern United States, so you might be familiar. They had designed a special smoothie called the Avocolada Smoothie this summer, and of course it had avocado in it. And they found out just shortly before the promotion, I believe, that their avocado supplier wasn't going to be able to get them the product that they needed. And, you know, they had to quickly scramble. This is the supply chain folks that help out Tropical Smoothie Cafes. They had to scramble to find a new supplier, and that avocado came in a little bit different packaging. It came chopped up as opposed to as whole avocados. So, you know, not only did they have to scramble to find that, but they also had to retrain the employees in sort of the amount that they were throwing into the blender when they were making these smoothies. And it was just a lot of kind of work at the last minute. They ended up with less avocado than they had anticipated they needed just because the available from this new supplier wasn't as much as the previous supplier. And they had to, as a result, kind of shift the promotion over to this other special item and kind of focus on that one because they weren't able at the last minute to make as many avocolatas as they anticipated they might need to.
We're speaking with Wall Street Journal supply chain reporter Erica Phillips. Her piece is called Hold the Rye, Promos Leave Restaurant Supply Chains Stretched. These limited time offers, they've always been around, but are just more popular right now to boost sales at slow times?
Yeah, exactly. As I mentioned, restaurant chains are having trouble getting people in the door. Their grocery stores are offering more prepared foods. Meal kits are becoming more popular. And traffic has just been dwindling at restaurant chains. And so these limited time offers provide a way to draw people in. And or maybe if people are coming anyway, to have them add an item to their order, you know, buy a little bit more every time they're in. And yeah, it just really has proliferated.
Thanks, Erica. It's Wall Street Journal reporter Erica Phillips. 13 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. How to answer your family's questions about your startup this holiday season. It could be awkward at Thanksgiving, right? Five tips from Eddie Yoon, founder of Eddie Would Grow. He wrote his tips for Inc.com. Number one, he says, ask good questions. Look for ways to segue from your startup to the other person's work or interest. Number two, pick a few good stories to share. Number three, preemptively share a few insightful articles and ideas. And number four, pick a family member or friend and get your startup conversation out of the way on friendly turf. This portion of the program is brought to you by Harry's. You know, each day I start my day with a shave with Harry's. There's no better shave. Also, giving Harry's as a gift to friends and family is a great idea this holiday season. You already know that Harry's makes amazing quality products at a super reasonable price, and you can personalize it to make it feel special. This holiday season, Harry's is offering custom and limited edition shaving sets that make perfect gifts. No matter what you're looking for, Harry's has you covered. Sets come ready to gift in beautifully designed gift boxes starting at just $10. As a special offer for fans of the show right now, we've partnered with Harry's to give you $5 off your first order when you enter the code DEAL at checkout. It's only for the holidays. And you don't have to order for the guys, by the way. My wife uses Harry's on her legs. Get your holiday shopping done early. Take advantage of free shipping to get a limited edition holiday shave set while supplies last. Go to harrys.com and enter the code DEAL at checkout for $5 off. harrys.com and use the code DEAL. 8 minutes in front of the hour on This Morning. Jennifer Koshenka is back with more of America's First News.
Court in the Justice Department is suing AT&T to stop its $85 billion purchase of Time Warner, setting the stage for an epic legal battle with the telecom giant. The government claims that consumer cable bills will rise if the merger goes through, saying the deal would substantially lessen competition, resulting in higher prices and less innovation for millions of Americans. AT&T CEO Randall Stephenson is ready to fight back.
This defies logic, and it is unprecedented. I've done a lot of deals in my career, but I've never done one where we have disagreed with the Department of Justice so much on even the most basic of facts.
The $108 billion deal has been in the works for more than a year. The Trump administration says it's ending a temporary residency permit program that has allowed almost 60,000 citizens from Haiti to live and work in the U.S. since a powerful earthquake shook the Caribbean nation in 2010. The Homeland Security Department says conditions in Haiti have improved significantly, so the benefit will be extended one last time until July 2019 to give Haitians time to prepare to return home. Florida Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz says that is not the case.
They end the program when there has been sufficient progress made and conditions have improved significantly. Nothing could be further from the truth when it comes to Haiti.
Advocates and members of Congress from both parties had asked the Trump administration for an 18-month extension of the program. It's been 2 months since Hurricane Maria plowed through Puerto Rico, and as of yesterday, more than 50% of the island is still without power. Telecommunications are operating at about 75% capacity and cell phone service at 65%. 1 in 10 Puerto Ricans still lack potable water. We'll talk about a sign of the times and a sad one at that. The Girl Scouts have issued a warning to parents this holiday season, asking them to think twice before forcing their daughters to hug relatives at gatherings. The Scouts say you don't want your child thinking they owe someone a hug just because they haven't seen them in a while or given them a gift. It's noted that nearly 1 in 3 episodes of sexual abuse of a child is perpetrated by a family member.
Thank you, Jen. It is 6 minutes now in front of the hour on This Morning, America's First News. Thanks for being with us. This year, Reynolds Kitchen developed what might be the most millennial turkey you could think of. Your grandma might hate it, but your Instagram followers will go nuts. Delish.com says the Flamin' Hot Cheetos turkey turns your bird bright red and is actually pretty easy to make. First, you grab a few bags of Flamin' Hot Cheetos, crush them up in a food processor, or place them in a zip-top bag and smash them with a rolling pin. Brush the turkey with oil or butter, then coat with the crushed chips. Add a teaspoon of flour to an oven bag, then place the bird in the bag and into a large roasting pan. You'll want to close the bag with a nylon tie, make about 6 1/2-inch slits in the bag before putting it in the oven. For a slightly more traditional-looking turkey with an equally crazy flavor, Reynolds, by the way, also created recipes for Funyuns turkey and a Cool Ranch Doritos turkey. For Jennifer Koschenka, I'm Gordon Deal. Thanks for listening to This Morning, America's First News.